it's time once again for Sports Sidebar, covering sports for Northeast Ohio, and sometimes even a little outside that area. Sports Sidebar, where we prove that a little knowledge is dangerous, but even less knowledge makes it a little easier to fill an hour. Now on to our hosts, Captain Bill and Dave.
And good Tuesday afternoon, everyone. And we are back with another week of Sports Sidebar. Kind of interesting because we actually have some sports to talk about from time to time.
We do in this era of the vid, COVID-19. It's, you never know from week to week whether we'll have sports or we end up trying to piecemeal something together because of all the suspensions and of play and people getting with, you know, getting caught with the COVID, and you never know. You just never know. But we do have some breaking news.
We do have breaking news. It's
semi-breaking.
Well, right. It was breaking. Well, it was trade deadline yesterday, Monday, and
yes,
the Indians made a trade and thought it was weird. They brought Clevinger back for a start, and then poof, he's gone.
Well, it was obvious from what I was able to read and listen to, that start by Clevinger by the Indians was what they call showcasing. In other words, he was out there to drive up the bargaining power of the Indians to get whatever they, you know, could from him. And the rumors were wild about them trading him to the White Sox, which didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
trading somebody within our division,
right?
And you know,
even though another rumor was that he was going to the Yankees, and that wouldn't make much more sense.
No, because you would face him in the playoffs, not necessarily this year, but in the regular season, because we don't play anybody except our division. And but certainly he would have been a factor, and you know what's going to happen when he plays us. He'll be like Cy Young.
Yeah.
So
of course.
So. There was rumors about him. We had a couple pretty good players from the Yankees, but that obviously didn't come to fruition. But what we did get is a boatload of players for Clevinger and, to a lesser extent, Greg Allen, which very nice young man, good teammate, very, very fast. He was often used as a pitch runner. But he was not hitting for anything this year.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole entire outfield was not hitting for anything this year so far. So they got Mike Clevinger, Greg Allen, and a player to be named later. I think that's you. They're going to throw you in there.
Yeah, and they'll be sorry. Yeah, I'll come back.
Yeah.
I'll come back to haunt them, all right.
Josh Naylor, who is a first baseman / outfielder. So, I mean, he's batting .278 with one homer. It doesn't sound like he's a super hitter by any stretch of the imagination, but compared to what we're hitting now in the outfield, I guess he has to contribute if he keeps it up. We got catcher, like I said, Hedges. First baseman outfielder Josh Naylor, right-handed pitcher Cal Quantrill. Now we got some prospects in addition. Shortstop Gabriel Harris. He's the number 7 Padres prospect, which is pretty high. Infielder.
He's their only top 10 prospect that we ended up with.
Yeah. The other, well, no, no. We have left-handed pitcher Joey Cantillo, number 9. Prospect, and then infielder Owen Miller, their number 11. So 7, 9, and 11. And you know, I think we all knew that after Clevinger deceived the team with not telling the front office or Terry Francona or anybody that he was out and about with Zach Plesac that one night, that he became poison in that locker room. So it was not surprising they would showcase him like they did last week, and we won with him pitching. But I didn't think he was long for the Cleveland Indians, a la Trevor Bauer. And we'll see how this all turns out. We've done a lot of deals with the Padres. We what did we get last year? We got Ramil Reyes and Logan Allen. A three-team deal with Bauer, who was sent to the Reds. And then 2 years ago, we got Brad Hand, our reliever, our closer, and Adam Simber, another relief pitcher for backstop or catcher Francisco Mejia. So I don't know how he's doing. I haven't heard that he's setting the world on fire, but certainly Brad Hand has had some ups and downs, but recently... And Simber is hot and cold. So I guess the long term progress of that that deal has yet to be finalized. But I don't know. I was hoping for at least someone with. Well, I heard of that guy. You know what I mean? Wow.
When you're giving up a good starting pitcher. That doesn't cost you a whole lot. That's under contract for 2 more years.
Yes, and
you'd think that you would be getting more than what we got.
Well, maybe there were some outfielders that we could get, but only have under contract for this season and maybe next, facing big costs down the road. By getting this shortstop, Gabriel Arias, maybe he's the heir apparent to Francisco Lindor. Now, I haven't heard anything about him being traded this year, and we don't know all the final details of this year's trading deadline, but nothing has come across the wire yet about Lindor. There's always talk about him. So I don't think teams are willing to give up a lot because of the fact that everybody's in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you virtually have 16 teams out of 30 going to make the playoffs. So the Padres are certainly within striking distance of being in the playoffs. They say they're going all in, and maybe, 9, 10, 11 is, a lot of, good prospects, obviously, that maybe not number one or number two. That's tough to get, but let's see what San Diego is doing right now. Well, they're 21-15. They're in second place. So
they actually started off slow, but then when they hit August, they seemed to do quite a bit better in August.
Yeah, and they're in really good shape to make the playoffs. So obviously, we are now 21-13. So
let me ask you something. How often have you heard a team that's in first place or tied for first place trade off a starting pitcher at the trading deadline?
Well, it's extremely rare, but we do have some depth. And I think this Tristan McKenzie, through his first start was outstanding. His second start, a little shaky, but he got through four and I think two-thirds innings and put us in a position to win. So I think they're looking at him to replace Clevinger in the rotation.
Well, we still have Plesac sitting there in the offsite.
And we have Plesac. Now, Plesac will probably be activated now to return to the home team. So you got Bieber, who's just outstanding. Really, really outstanding.
He's leading the American League in three statistical categories. He's at 6-0. And he is the lowest ERA in all of the American League. I think might be tied in the National League as well. And leads strikeouts in both leagues by almost 20, by almost 20 strikeouts to the National League.
So as of right now, he's certainly a premier pitcher and a leading candidate for the Cy Young. And you've got Savale, who had a rough outing on Sunday, but has been pretty steady. You're going to have Plesac come back into the rotation. You're going to have Tristan McKenzie And then you have Carlos Carrasco, who pitched outstanding the other day, but ended up with a no decision because the bullpen gave up a couple runs. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad rotation. You still got Logan Allen and others in the Jeffrey Rodriguez, Logan Allen. So we have a lot of starting pitching. So they must think that at least Tristan McKenzie and Zach Plesac can make up the production that's and they do have some. Oh, here we go. Potential.
Oh, I didn't think you were going to go there.
Oh, yes. And these guys that they got from San Diego, especially well, you got another relief pitcher, and you've got some backup in the infield. But they say that who's going down to well, going up to, I guess, the captain's facility. I think three of the six are going there. So we'll get three. I mean, if I was Sandy Leon, I'd be a little concerned about my long-term prospects. I don't know what happened. Is it like Jake Bauer? They must really have been giving up on him. Bradley Zimmer. So, I mean, Bradley Zimmer is just, you know, they said he had just a fantastic spring training number
two. He showed the spark. Yeah, when we came back for the summer, the warm-up, he showed the spark that he'd showed in basically throughout all of his minor league career. He's, you know, he's one of these guys that, that Tim Davison has always called your 4A players. He's he's too good for AAA, and he's not good enough for the majors.
That may be a Jake Bauer situation as well.
Could very well be, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with those guys. They certainly are
well, at some point, if they don't do something with them, they lose them on waivers.
Well, they got them under contract for another few years.
Right, but I'm just saying, if nothing is done, eventually that's what happens. If they keep giving them shots and they just can't make it, you know, how many shots do you give them?
Well, you know, they gave Zimmer plenty of chances this year, and he ended up batting about 200, and he looked lost at the plate. Now, what's happened here recently is Tyler Naquin is your the spark, I guess, that we've gotten in the outfield, and he's done a good job. But really, you need your left and right fielders to be your sluggers. And I don't know this Naylor guy that we're going to get from San Diego is the answer. And certainly center field, that was supposed to be, you know, Bradley Zimmer's position to lose, and he's lost it.
Yeah.
So we got Delano DeShields, who is not necessarily a powerhouse hitter. And I keep forgetting this other Carlos Santana's buddy, his namesake, Dominion Santana or something like that.
Yeah,
and he hasn't done very well. So our outfield is pathetic. It's really bad. And other than Naquin coming off now, his leave and doing pretty well. But my goodness gracious, I don't know if this is the answer. This particular trade, it does address perhaps down the road if they lose. Well, they will lose. Francisco Lindor,
they will lose.
I mean, he's got, certainly this time next year, I don't think he'll be with the Indians, and maybe in the off season they'll deal with deal him away with as much as they can possibly get, or the other teams is just wait them out, because after the trade deadline next year they lose him in the off season in 2021. So all that has to be worked out, and of course, the loss of tremendous amount of revenue due to the pandemic is something in the equation as well. But certainly, your big market teams like New York, the LA's, the Chicago's.
Right.
They will be doing what they can. The Philadelphia's, the big market teams, will do whatever they can to secure Francisco Lindor, not only because he's a very good player, but he has that kind of personality that could lead him to a lot of endorsements nationwide. And so L.A., New York, that kind of market is probably where he's headed to. And you have to leave it up to Antonetti and Chernoff to get what they can, but he'll be a huge loss. But I don't know how good this number nine prospect is at shortstop. It's hard to get a number nine prospect for an all-star to fill those shoes.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly.
But on the other hand, we're in first place. We're tied with Chicago, and we have played very good ball. We took 2 out of 3 in Minnesota. And 2 out of 3 in St. Louis over the weekend, and they're headed to Kansas City. They have Kansas City for 3 games, and they're off on Thursday, and then they play Milwaukee. So we're in pretty darn good shape. I mean, I don't think they would have done it.
You know, more than having a big super duper name, you know, instead of getting 5 players for 2 is what it seems like, or three players, one to be named later. 3 players for 5 players is about what it comes down to. Wouldn't it have been better just to get somebody that's a good, solid hitter, if nothing else?
Well, I'm sure they explored all those possibilities. I would think that they did their due diligence. Of course, you know, the Indians, they are cost-conscious on contracts. So if they went ahead and got something, that would cost them lots of money next year or the year after, they look at that as well. So we're a small market team, and they have to try to win with managing their dollars, and those dollars have been shrunk as a result of what's happening.
Right.
So I would, you know, as a fan, yes, I wanted them to get Aaron Judge for Mike Clevenger. I know that's just ridiculous.
Yes.
Or when the talk was about Chicago, my goodness, I would have loved to have some of their big boppers. If Chicago is a team to be reckoned with because of their hitters.
Well, and the White Sox as well, they've got a lot of guys. I think I was looking at their batting averages just out of curiosity, because since they're sitting there on top of us, and I just had their most recent stats when I got the Tigers and Twins. You know, the Twins have kind of surprised me lately. They have really struggled as of late. The Twins have. But look at the White Sox. Their leadoff guy is 343, followed by Jimenez, 302. Next guy is 328, 312, 340, 291, 253, 263. And their number nine hitter is, who was just a pitch hitter. You really can't count his, which means he isn't in there regularly. But I'm just saying, when you look at those numbers, their lowest guy, lowest regular person is 228. Everyone else is... There's a 253, 263, 291, 312, 340, 303, 343. You know, that can make up for some bullpen issues that they do have.
That's correct. Now, I don't have the leaders as far as hitting goes, but as you said, Bieber's number one at 6-0. I don't have the homers or anything, but... just looking at some of these White Sox players, I mean, Abreu would have been great. I mean, there's some center fielder. Roberts would have been. You weren't going to get a top-notch hitter for Mike Clevenger because everybody's in it this year, and they need all the offense they can get. So this trade is going to take executed by the Indians on yesterday's deadline is probably the best they thought they could get. And those prospects will be playing for year years to come in our system. And I don't know, this Naylor is, again, he's batting 276, and compared to our team, I think our combined average for the outfield is like 166. It's truly pathetic. And
it's just absolutely, yeah, you know what, I guess if you had to trade within your own division, go to a team that's got a lot of hitting and get some decent hitting for a starting pitcher.
Well, I just didn't believe that they were going to trade within their division. That's just almost unheard of. Unless a team is so down in the standings in a regular year. Like, let's say we're last year we had, let's say Kansas City was willing to give up one of their star players because there's no way they would have caught the Indians or the Twins. That's one thing. But this year, with everybody in it, I would have loved to have Whit Merrifield. My goodness gracious, that guy's an Indian killer.
Yeah.
But, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. That, if you got rid of Whit Merrifield on the Royals team, you wouldn't have a team there at all. I mean, it's just as far as being competitive. So,
I mean, we've got Alonso de Shields batting 277, and he's a punch and Judy type hitter, just singles and once in a while a double. You know, you got Hernandez is doing a good job as a leadoff player at 271. He leads or is tied in the American League for doubles, so he's doing his job. Ramirez is finally climbing up a little bit. He's at 248. Lindor is climbing up a little bit, 266. You got Carlos Santana. He's hurting us at 211. But that's an improvement.
I mean, well, right, and he does get a ton of walks. He either gets walked or out just about.
Yeah, his on-base percentage makes up for some of that, but you got to come in the clutch once in a while, and he has. And you just got to hope. But we the season's rapidly.
We're more than halfway through the season now already.
Yeah, isn't that something?
it's hard to fathom that it started so late, but yet here we are over halfway through our season.
So we have 34 games, so we got 26 left. So about a month. That's it. About a month. I mean, today's the 1st of September. So, and you got Reyes, who's doing a good job at 289, and you got Naquin at 291. Yeah, Luplo. I don't know why they keep this guy in. He's at 116 batting average. I mean, that's an anchor. That's an anchor. I don't know why they just don't bring up Bauer. I mean, or 116. And he seems like he's getting more and more at bats. They must see something in his swing or the possibility of him connecting here soon, but I don't know. But we have tremendous offensive problems in the outfield, especially at right, and Naquin could move over to center, but we need a right fielder, and maybe this Naylor guy will help fill the void, but they got to generate some offense.
Yeah.
And not only from the outfielders, but Carlos Santana, and you got Jose Ramirez. Now, he hit a home run on Sunday, and he's pretty hot and cold, but right now, we're complaining with this team being in first place, and we're complaining. And
it's true, except that what we see, we've done very well lately, and we're first place because the Twins have taken such a nosedive.
Mm-hmm.
But we're now tied with the White Sox. We were yesterday by ourselves, but of course you can't win every game, and you can't expect to win every game. You win every series, and you're there, but we see what other teams around us have. We have the pitching, but you still have to score points.
Yeah. Well, Chicago White Sox are 8-2 in their last 10 games. That's pretty darn impressive. We're 6-4, which isn't bad, especially when we've been on the road. So, And right behind us is, of course, the Twins, and I think we'll have probably three teams go to the playoffs right now, just based on what I see here. So, I guess
guess I'm disappointed that we didn't get a real big bat like you are. But I guess it's a wait and see whether this will be a great trade or not down the road.
Yeah. And it always isn't, you know, and you know, we have to admit that Chris Antonetti is smarter than we are. It just
maybe smarter than you.
He's definitely smarter than me because I'm not making his money. But
well,
you know,
is he a captain?
He is not. Well, no, but he does. You know, he's in charge of the captains. So does that make it?
Oh yeah, I guess you're right.
Fine. Yeah,
I stand corrected.
So, you know, he's in charge of captains, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, we don't know. There's some trades we made down, you know, before where we thought we had something good, and actually what we got with as the extra merchandise has been better than the stuff that we actually traded for.
Oh, Michael Brantley was one of the cases.
Michael Brantley was one of them, yeah.
Or C.C. Sabathia, way down. How's he? I wonder how he's doing here. Let's see.
Didn't he retire? He retired.
Michael Brantley?
Oh, Michael Brantley. I thought you meant CC. Yeah.
Oh, CC's retired. Yeah. But we got Michael Brantley through the CC Sabathia trade. And I'm trying to see.
Where is that? In Houston?
Yeah, the Houston Astros, Nationals, Rays, Pirates. It's probably right in front of me, you know that?
Yeah, I'm kind of glancing for it, too. Pirates, Braves. I don't see. Oh, you know what? Their game.
That's right.
Their game was canceled yesterday. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there was somebody in that organization that had the COVID. So. And that's going to be interesting, too. I mean.
Yeah, how are you going to. And you got teams like St. Louis and some of these teams that lost so many games, and now they've got to do, like, double headers. So many double headers to catch up. What does that do to your pitching?
Oh, I think they're toast. I don't think St. Louis is going to make the playoffs. And I think there's 1 week in September they had 3 double headers in 1 week. 3.
Yeah.
Now they're able to expand their roster for those games, but still, I it's just it's almost an impossible task. And you're right, Houston. Houston was playing somebody, and I think it was Houston who had either a player or a member of the staff who came down with that. So, and thank goodness we're the only team in the major league without anybody either with COVID or on the injured list right now, which is amazing.
Well, I tell you what, these guys, they took an oath to each other, and they take it seriously, which is why so many feelings were hurt when they cheated on each other.
Yes. And I just had a feeling that you just don't mess around with Terry Francona. And they may have forgiven Plesac because he's a little younger and kind of dumb in some of the things he's done. But Clevinger is a 29-year-old man. And
right.
He went out there and said, yes, we have an obligation, and did exactly the wrong thing. After he said he was doing the right thing. And then the players got on him. He had Oliver Perez saying, hey, if he comes back, I'm gone. So there was, I think everybody knew that this last start by Clevinger was a showcase start and that he was gone. And the best deal they probably could have gotten for him without knowing all the costs involved of players that they could have gotten, so on and so forth. So they got basically 6 prospects. Right?
Yes.
Apparently, and Naylor is the plum in the basket as far as players go. So, we just got to hope the other players start hitting. I mean, we got to hope that Ramirez starts hitting around 300 that he's capable of doing.
And he was up there. I mean, at one point he was batting almost 400, and then he went down to almost 200, and now he seems to be maybe moving back up again, but. Yeah.
He's the guy that gets lost very quickly. You know what I mean? He seems to be, and all of a sudden he'll cool off like an ice cube and just do horribly like he's never played the game. And then all of a sudden, wow, he's back at it.
Yeah.
So that's just his history. And Carlos Santana has been a notorious slow starter, but this year he can't be a slow starter. It's not like he's playing April and going into May. We're going now into the stretch of the season to get into the playoffs. So we still have outstanding pitching. I mean, my goodness gracious, Beavers just doing fantastic. But he also had Plutko too. I mean,
right? Yeah, Plutko, and you know, being a younger kid, which is probably why he's there, and also is a lesson to him. Look, you were lucky. This guy got traded, and we could trade you too. You know.
Oh, I think he won't do anything like that again.
But then it wasn't as bad that it was bad that he did that against his teammates. But and then he turned around and did that rant on the internet.
Yeah, blaming the media.
That, again, that's a kind of a rookie dumb thing to do. You know,
well, that seems to be in vogue anymore. If you do something bad, blame the people who report it.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I did it, but look at you're blowing it out of proportion. I really didn't do it that badly. Oh, wait a minute here. You blew the protocol. So, yeah, the media blew it out of proportion, I guess. That was just, but it just seems to be in vogue.
Yeah.
You do something wrong, and it's the media's fault. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that's one word for it. Yes,
yeah, it's amazing. So let's hope we can maintain our good pitching and get the hitting going. I'm still mildly concerned about the lack of offense.
You can have the greatest pitching in the world, but you have to hit the ball and you have to score runs.
You got to score at least 4 to 5 runs in the American League, and now in the National League too, because they have. They don't have the designated hitter anymore. So,
right.
And I really do believe that's going to become universal next year. And I tell you what, I was surprised listening to Tom Hamilton thinking that, you know, he's a pretty baseball traditionalist thinking that, yeah, I think we should keep the second base corner in extra innings.
Yeah,
I was taken aback by it. Now
I was, and I still am. I just think, and it happened the first time it happened to us, and it's not that we couldn't do that too because we can, but when you can push a run across without a hit, then you know if you're going to start somebody, don't start them in scoring positions. At least start them on at first so that they at least have to work to get the second, then to third, because you can't. You can't do 3 sacrifices. You can do 2 sacrifices, get the guy to second, or, get the guy to third, then you can do a sacrifice to get the guy home. You can't do 3 sacrifices, but it still gives you a runner on base.
Well, we took advantage of it against St. Louis other night.
I understand. I just don't like it. If it had always been part of the rules, then maybe I never would have thought about it. But that it's never been part of the rules and that it is... just like the 8 innings, there was a doubleheader. I think it was a Yankees game that was on Sunday, and both games were only 8 innings long. And you know what? I'm not crazy about that. I understand it.
You mean the 7 innings for a doubleheader?
I think those were 8 inning games.
No, there's no 8 innings, either 7 or not. In a doubleheader, it's a 7 inning game. 2 7 inning games.
Well, but the Yankees and the Mets played, and there's an 8 after each score. So it was the Yankees 8, the Mets 7 in game 1 with an 8 in brackets. Then it was Yankees.
Okay, they had a tie game going into the 8th inning. That has to be it because they only played 7 inning games in a doubleheader. So if they went into extra innings, a 7 inning game, that would be the 8th inning. That's the only way.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see. So they are 7 innings. So I like that even less.
Well, for a doubleheader in this particular situation,
you know what? I accept it for this year. Just like I guess I can accept the runner on second base. I hate it. I can accept it for this year. I don't want to accept that as a new rule that goes into effect for the whole thing. I can't imagine the players like that either because, yeah, it can work to your advantage, but it can work against you. You know, why not let your teams make up the decision who's going to win and who's not? Instead of putting a guy on, you get two sacrifices and you got to score in. I don't like that. I don't like that.
I understand, but with teams being susceptible to getting the COVID-19, and anybody who's tested positive, even though they're asymptomatic, they shut that team down. And it's not like somebody gets hurt with a broken ankle or something like that, and they keep playing. I mean, this year is, I can understand it, just because of the pandemic. I can understand it. And let's face it, there's very, very few doubleheaders in a regular 162 season.
Right, they've taken that away because it doesn't make as much money. It doesn't matter this year because you're not letting the fans in the stands.
Yeah, so I think that for this year, that's fine. But we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see whether or not they're going to continue
The only thing I really like at this point, because they play each other so much, is to see that the National League does now have the designated hitter. I would like to see that stay, only because there's at least one game every day, if not more, even during the regular season, the way we had it, where you had a National League and American League team play. It just doesn't make any sense to play two different games.
Another thing, too, is a relief pitcher coming in and facing at least three. I don't know if I like that or not.
Well, again, that takes a lot of it out of your manager's hands in a lot of ways. It ties his hands. It's because I thought this was the age of specialization. You know, you got a guy, you want to bring him in to get this one guy out and then send him along his way. And again, if you speed up the game a little bit, and I don't know how much that actually speeds up the game.
I don't think it speeds it up.
But if it speeds it up, just because the game gets a little bit faster, does that mean that more people are going to come to the games or watch the games? If they don't like the game, if they think it's too slow, they're not going to watch it anyway.
You're exactly right. So I don't like that because, let's say you bring in Oliver Perez to face a lefty, and then the team knows that they could put two right-handed hitters in or pitch hit for him, and he's at a disadvantage then.
Yes.
If he's put in to face one particular batter, Austin Mocker. Remember him in the 90s? I mean, he was brought in to face one or two batters if they happened to be left-handed. And I don't like that rule. I think I like that rule the least of all the new ones. The jury's still out on the second baseman in extra innings. I'm still open-minded about it. I'm probably 60-40 against it. But we'll wait and see on that. The seven innings in a regular season for a doubleheader, I don't know whether I like that or not either.
How many games are won in the ninth inning?
A lot of games are.
So you're going to take away that chance for either team.
Yeah. It changes everything. It changes how long a starter goes. It changes what kind of relief pitchers you're going to use. I mean, it's not a regular game at seven innings. It's a softball game. That's what we play, the old guys. Next thing they're going to do is start with a 1-1 count, which we do. And if you get into extra innings, you got on a second base, but you start out with a 3-2 count. You either have a strike or a walk. You either strike out or walk, or you hit.
Wait. In extra innings, you start with a guy on second, and you walk up to the plate with a 3-2 count?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
And I used to be 1-1, but they wanted to expedite the games this year because schedules were kind of close between one game and the next.
But that's just for this year, then.
That's just for this year.
But you usually do start with a runner on second base.
That's correct. And we normally don't have a 1-1 count. But if you have two strikes and then you foul a ball, that's strike three. Maybe they're going to go with that, Robbie. You get up there and it's not too exciting to see a guy hit eight or nine foul balls in a row. But that's part of the game.
That is part of the game. Yes,
that's part of the game.
That's how a batter usually can finally many times beat a pitcher. He keeps fouling off pitches till he gets one that he can get and put in play. When you have those big long ones where there's been some players like 11, 12, you know, 15 pitches and then finally get a hit, it's because they've worn the pitcher down to a point where they get that ball where they want it.
Even if they don't, it's called a good at bat because what you're doing is raising the pitcher's pitch count.
Yes.
And since most pitchers only go 100 pitches at bat a game now because it's become more of a 5-6 inning game for starters and the rest are bullpen. If you can hit off 10 foul balls, you're consuming 10% of his pitches in one player.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're absolutely right. If you don't like baseball, you could care less whether they have 7 innings or man on second and stuff like that. I don't know.
I understand with the people's attention span and that people like, if they like soccer, it's because it's a much faster game. There's not a lot of scoring, usually, but it's a much faster game, and there's always action going on. And the same with hockey. Reason I don't enjoy hockey, it moves too fast. I can't even keep up with the puck, you know? And so the game moves too fast. With baseball and with football, to me, those are games you can savor in between plays or in between pitches and things like that. And you have the best announcers because they have time in between and they have to say things to keep you busy. And you come up with statistics and numbers and stories. And that's why one of your color guys should always be a former player who's always got of the stories, you know, to tell.
That's right. Well, that's the only downside with the radio side of the broadcast is that they don't have a player in the booth. Where you have Rick Manning on the baseball side, and I tell you what, he's extremely knowledgeable. Extremely knowledgeable. I mean, he's a Gold Glove center fielder, and you know, was average batting wise, but he played the game at a high level for 12 years, and. He's talking about stories. This guy has a lot of stories, and he played the game. He can give you insight. And what I like too is that both Matt Underwood and Andre Knott pick his brain every single game. I said, Arch, what would you do in this particular situation?
Yeah.
What do you think about? And he knows. He knows. He's like a Jim Hegan.
Yes.
They are sorely missing on the radio.
Jim Hegan and Tom Hamilton were so enjoyable to listen to because Tom Hamilton, one of the best play callers, and Hegan, that guy never ran out of stories.
Terry Blue had a nice article about Tom Hamilton. He was a dairy farmer kid, started out the lowest of low, bottom rung of minor league, and now is... When he was asked that he would be considered into the Hall of Fame, I think the Flick Award, he said, "I can't believe it. I mean, it doesn't even register with me. I just don't think I'm that kind of caliber." Of course, he is.
He is. Yeah.
He is. But it would be great if they had somebody in the booth. I mean, even basketball now, when Joe Tate. Retired, they got Jim Jones in there as a player.
Yes.
To go with John Michael. So it's when they have a football game, it's always the next player giving you their perspective on what's going on. Some of them are awful. They're just awful. But, Doug Deegan is very, very good. And there's only the experience you can get by playing the game that you can project to the audience listening, and you just don't get that on the radio side.
No,
but I love Tom Hamilton. You know, I would when they're playing like on Fox Network, the Fox regular network, and I can sync Tom Hamilton on the radio. I can do that now since he's broadcasting from a feat when they're away.
Yeah,
so So anyway, that was. Quite interesting, this trade. I guess we'll see what happens. In 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the Browns' first game.
Yes, we will.
It's right around the corner.
They had one of their last practices before the season starts, I think.
Yeah, I guess they go into game mode. One of the guys, I forgot what his name is, who covers it, for the Lorraine Alleria newspapers, right. And he's often on the fan a lot. You know, he's saying that the Browns are way behind as far as they haven't even concentrated on their 2-minute drills yet. And he actually said that Case Keenum is more attuned to the Stefanski offense than Baker Mayfield as far as picking it up. Now, he's not saying there's a controversy at all right now that Baker Mayfield is the guy. Right. But right now, Baker Mayfield hasn't been as proficient in the Stefanski offense as Case Keenum. And I have not done the power rankings. I will do that. Yes, I should do it next week.
Yeah, we start right up there. Yeah.
Yeah, to see where we are in relationship to the other teams. Again, it's hard to project what's going to happen this season. We just don't. You just don't. I guess they're only allowed to have 1,500 people, even though they're trying to come up with some seating pods of people who know each other and so on and so forth. And you can only go to the concession stand at certain times when you're. I don't know how it all works, but it seems to me that Americans in general don't seem to be able to discipline themselves to the extent needed to. I guess one thing, they won't have tailgates because they're going to close
down. The mayor has done away with tailgating in Cleveland for the game.
In the muni lot.
The muni lot,
I don't know. I can't prevent you from going to ABC parking lot, I guess, with a bunch of people and a private lot and doing the same. But it's certainly, there's no lots around the First Energy Field
But most of those people don't even go inside the game. They have their own TV set up, and they have their all their hibachis and grills going. That they, you know, they have no intention of going inside. They got more fun out there than they do in the game.
And if they do have tickets, they stumble in. I've seen people being literally carried by the elbows into the First Energy Field.
To head to that dog pound, huh?
Yeah. My goodness gracious. So I don't know. I really don't know where the Browns are. I mean, there's some very stiff competition, especially with the Ravens, who they're going to start out with this year.
Right.
And they got a new head coach.
The Ravens won their division, and the Steelers did not win their division, but they didn't have they only had Big Ben for about three games, and that was it.
Yeah. So we'll do the power rankings and
you got
see.
You got the number one draftee in Cincy, and so in another couple years, when they have enough to build around him, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Will the Browns? We certainly seem to have enough offensive weapons. Do we have a quarterback to use those?
Well, that's true, but our depth at offensive line has been diminished because two or three of the guards and tackles have taken the leaves this year. And so if somebody gets hurt, that's something to be concerned about. You've had some really big injuries on defense, so that's a concern. And you don't know about Baker Mayfield. Last year, if you're a true diehard Browns fan, and I'm not, I'm an interested observer, of course, you know, I don't know. Everybody's saying he's evolving as a leader. He looks good, and so that's all fine and good. But you know, can he find two outstanding receivers that they have, OBJ and Lavery? So I don't know.
I guess he's, you know, he didn't look so well in that last practice. But then again, you know, he did say something that made sense too. He said, "Look, This isn't our regular offense we're running here. We almost had no running plays, and look at the running backs we have, you know. So why you can't really go on that except that they can go on that they he wasn't connecting real well. I guess he missed a good one with OBJ, but he got the next one, and it was first team going against the second team defense, and they didn't look that good."
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the experience of having a new coach.
Right. I mean, to be honest with you, anybody who has a new coach as the Browns have. And there are, what, about four or five teams out there that have that, are in an extreme disadvantage because they don't know their coach. Their coach doesn't know them. You know, you're Kansas City, where the guy's been there for 4 years. Most of the coaching staff is intact for 4 years. And they're just adding pieces instead of redoing their team every other year. You know, it's a distinct advantage in a situation like what we're facing this year coming into it. That, to be honest with you, if the Browns do anything, it's going to be something they have to grow into. It's not going to start, especially when you start off with the Ravens.
Yeah, so you got to utilize Landry. I called him Lavery before I met Landry. And OBJ, you've got some very good tight ends. And then you've got two really, really good running backs. So in Chubb and the other guy, I can't remember his name, right?
The Kansas City kid, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that
Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt. Okay.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt, the Cleveland kid, actually, yeah.
Yeah. And then if they start utilizing their running and tight ends, you're going to – they say OBJ's head is in the right place. He's just wonderful now. He's got a home here. But if he's only getting three or four attempts a game, and Landry's only getting two or three attempts a game, and they're running the ball because that's the only way they can move the ball down the field, I don't know. I mean, and of course, you got other teams playing the game as well. They're going to defense now, Chubb and Hunt more, and they're going to. But we have some offensive tools if Baker Mayfield can orchestrate it.
Yes.
And that's the key. I mean, you gotta have a franchise quarterback to get into the playoffs and move up to the possibility of the Super Bowl, which I have no inkling that they have that kind of structure now. If they make the playoffs, that's going to be, I have no idea what they're going to do this year. I'm going to use 8-8 as a base and adjust it from there. But, We will see.
Hey, before we run out of time here, I had a thought, and I want to see what your thoughts were on this.
Mm-hmm.
As Akron has shut down its sports and its contact sports, I honestly don't think anybody in high school should be playing any contact sports. I just think that's not a smart thing in this day and age, but so many teams are. Is it fair that the Akron kids don't get a chance to play, and yet they step outside, like two of them from East went up to Twinsburg, and they're playing. And Copley's playing, and they're playing all around them. Their Green is playing. You know, is that really fair for the kids in Akron that they're doing what they should do, what they're supposed to do, but on the other hand, everybody else is getting the chance to play and showcase?
Yes, and there's no good decision here. I guess two of the members of the Board of Education in Akron have now changed their mind, and that will allow the Akron kids to play. So that's something new that's come up in the last few days, so I think they're going to get their opportunity. But this has also led to all kinds of controversy as far as Ohio State, and they're just wondering why in the world they're not allowed to play, and you've got...
Yeah, because from what I've seen, a lot of people consider Ohio State to have been the best team heading into the season. Now, of course they're not, because they haven't even been working out. They couldn't do their spring workout. They couldn't do their scrimmages. They couldn't do their scrimmage game. But Ohio State, people were looking at them as the best team in the nation going into this.
Yes, they certainly were. They were in most of the preseason polls, which, you know, who knows of them. But they, Ohio State was one or two, or certainly in the top three in most preseason polls. And they have not had a abandoning ship there at Ohio State either. I mean, nobody's gone into the transfer protocol from Ohio State. Now they're talking about starting the season at Thanksgiving. Who they're going to play, who knows. You've had some schools and high schools where players or cheerleaders or coaches have come down with it. The Highland schools, where my nephew is a coach, I think they had been shut out their first two games because some of the players have have been tested positive. You have some people say, hey, listen, these are young kids. If one kid gets positive, they all should still play. They shouldn't all be quarantined because the worst they're going to get is a flu or something like that. I mean, it's all over the board. It's just, like I said, we don't have the discipline to eradicate this thing because people want to go out with their, you know, live their normal lives, and it's not normal. And you got a lot of 180,000 people have died of this.
Yes.
That's something that should sink in with all of us, 180,000 people. And you see it all around the Porter Lakes that people are just, they're just, forget about it, I'm going to have a party. And you just had another bar, Pick's Bar, in the Porter Lakes cited for violation of the health rules and liquor control laws. And they're jeopardizing their own business. I mean, if somebody calls the Department of Liquor Control and they send agents out there, it's a slam dunk. This is a second bar in as many weeks.
Yeah.
So we just, as a society, have just said, let the chips fall where they may. And the consequences can be dire since we're heading into the flu season. More and more people are going to go indoors, and this thing really festers in society. And, of course, you know, the basketball and hockey have been in their bubble, and so far, so good. I have no answers. I don't know what the right thing is to do. Some part of me says, yeah, let them play. And the other part is I'm worried about what they do to their families when they are in close contact and bring it back to mom or aunts and uncles, and especially their grandparents, for goodness sakes. Who knows? But I agree. If everybody around us is playing, and around Akron, for example, is allowed to play, the pressure is now on the members of the school board, and I think they are going to be allowed to play as soon as they're up and running and practices and things like that. I think Monday, yesterday, was the day that they decided to go ahead and do it. And that just, you know, you as a college player, you see all the high school players starting to do it, and they have better medical facilities at colleges, and they're just wondering why they're not allowed to play. Of course, many colleges have shut down and going only to online because of the amount of kids getting it.
Yeah, and because what are they doing there? The first thing they're doing is they're getting their parties going and exposing themselves, and it's, you know, But you know what? I hear the music coming in, good captain.
Oh, speaking of music, this is a good pop for that. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. A music store had a small sign which read, "Bach in a minute."
And it would. It would.
Yeah, that's not a great one, but I like this.
There you go. Bach. Yeah. You got to say Bach.
In a
minuet, yes.
Yes,
there you go. That's going to do it for this week, and we'll be back next week. Football will soon be on tap. Baseball's going to, hockey should be heading towards their finals.
Hockey
should be heading towards their finals just about, and interesting that we're still going. The virus doesn't stop, but then neither do we, so that's going to be... That's going to be it, and we'll see everyone next week on Sports Channel.